the expectations are different and the responsibilities are at a much higher level. So you'll come into a troop as a new officer, but the expectation is that you'll be able to lead pretty much any of these missions straight away without, you know, you'll need mentorship like anyone, but you're meant to have the skill sets and the training and the temperament to be able to lead these missions straight away. So it's quite a high level of responsibility. Some of them are hostage recovery missions. Some are personal protective detachments, kind of like what you saw with President Trump the other day, like leading missions where you're trying to protect one person from disaster. And that's hard because you've got to be on 100% of the time and your opponents only have to get it right once.
Welcome to Partnership Plus, your go-to source for modern partnership wisdom with your host, Phil Hayes St. Clair.
Hey, it's Phil, and in this episode of Partnership Plus, I'm thrilled to introduce you to Mark Wales. Mark is an old friend of mine and a former Special Operations Major who transitioned from the Australian Defence Force to become an entrepreneur, a speaker, a leadership expert, and an author. We're going to cover his most recent book called Outrider, and it is a spectacular book. It's his second. In this episode, we talk about everything from the process of writing that book right through to the role that partnerships play, both in writing a book, what it was like in the military to form partnerships, and how partnerships play a really significant role in his life today. You are going to love this episode. So without further ado, here is Mark Wales.
I was part of Australia's Special Ops Task Group. I had a team of 30 men.
The war on terror in Afghanistan is in full swing. There are thousands of troops pouring into the country. There's no polite way of saying it. It was tough, dirty, dangerous work that no one else wanted to do. The motto is who dares wins. That doesn't mean we charge into any fight we can find. It means we take a calculated risk to try and achieve a really good outcome. So the mission came first always, the team came second, and then you as the individual came third.
I remember taking off my helmet, putting my rifle on a blanket. What do you wish you'd done differently? What do you regret? I thought I had more time. And the only reason we got out is because we stuck to our mission, we looked after each other, and we worked as hard as we could to survive.
Years later, when I joined the corporate sector, I realized that these things are not just used for improving you when you're under stress mentally.
They're actually the pillars of high performance.
Put your hand up if one of these goes out the window when you get busy. This is just the basics. But the basics done well is actually extremely hard to do.
I think they're proof that reinvention is actually the key to success.
And what they found was the mission-orientated companies returned about 6 times more shareholder value. Because so often, complexity is the enemy of execution. A lot of people have asked me that. They're like, what's that like, people shooting at you at close range? If I could sum it up in one word, it's unpleasant. Right? It's not fun at all. I went back for 4 more tours of Afghanistan, another tour in Lebanon, another in Iraq, just by looking after myself and paying attention to my mental state.
I'd heard about this TV show back in Australia called Survivor, and I thought, excellent, I'll apply for it. What'll really happen is I'll win the whole thing, so I'm trained in survival and skills and hand-to-hand stuff. I ended up meeting this young lady, and we were very close on the show. She was the only one I could trust, and we were thick as thieves.
We welcomed this little guy to the world. We think about what we're going to teach him. Mate, you have less time than you think. Keep your mind, your body, your spirit, and your tools ready to go. So choose a goal that you're excited by and execute towards it every day.
Mark Wales, we've known each other for a long time, and it is a great pleasure to see you again, mate.
Mate, good to see you. Good to see you doing well.
Yeah, look, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff today. We're going to cover some things about partnerships. We're going to talk about your most recent book, which I have sitting in front of me right here. And I've got to say, it is one of the best I've read in a long time. There are some really important messages through that book. Very keen to talk about that. And I'd love people to walk away from this episode knowing that someone like you who has seen a lot in their lives can do amazing things around the world and create a massive impact. So we're going to cover all aspects of your life in less than 45 minutes. It's a challenge. Easy. I know you're good for it.
Mate, we're concise talkers.
That's it. When we first met, and it was some years ago, I can't remember how long ago it was, but it's been some time, I walked away from our first conversation with three words in mind that described you, at least in my mind. And I'm sure all of the mates that we know in common would probably share this point of view. They were kind, humble, and strong. And as I've seen you go through all the things from your post-military life into all the ventures you've got, all the activities you've done, those three values seem to have really come to the fore time and time again. So some people who might have been living under a rock don't know who you are. So let's start at the very beginning. Who is Mark Wales and where did he come from?
Mate, thanks. That's a very nice compliment. And I remember meeting you as well. It was good to catch up and see someone who was so like-minded. But my story is not uncommon to a lot of people who go through the military. Grew up in regional Western Australia. Was a Perth boy by the time I packed up high school and left, and had a career in the military that went for 16 years. And it was during a busy, I guess, operational period during that time in the army. Six of those were in the SAS, so I was able to get a lot of deployments into Afghanistan and Iraq and kind of Middle East and Central Asia. And after that, I mean, that's a big career on its own. And then I had to transition out of that and then go into the corporate sector. I was in my early 30s when I did that. And I went off to business school in the US and went on and worked in a consulting firm in the US and in Australia. And then since then have come out and I work for myself now, doing keynote speaking and training companies around resilience and teamwork and leadership, because I think they're the pillars of any strong organization. I do that. And then on the side, if I'm not doing that, I'll take advantage of any great opportunities that come up. And I mean, the Furiosa film was one of those. That was a pretty cool opportunity. And then having worked with a publisher before, doing a nonfiction book, I had an idea about a fiction book and I pursued that took about 2 years part-time work, and then that came out only just recently. So yeah, mate, I've been lucky.
Been well and been busy and really grinding away at it. I mean, to add just some more detail to that, you know, Wharton, fantastic school to go and do an MBA at. Did some time at McKinsey as a management consultant, founded Kill Capture, which in case people aren't aware of what that is, a fantastic rugged brand, which I think now also sells whiskey, which is amazing, at least. And, you know, two-time reality TV star on Survivor, where you won one of those contests, two-time author, two books, speaker, podcaster, educator, like you said. Like this is a lot of life jammed into, you know, a pretty short life so far. And then you've got a fantastic family on the side as well, which has been, I know, a massive part of your most recent history. So before we get into a lot of the partnership conversation that I'm very keen to have with you, let's talk about this writing approach you've taken. The first book you wrote was Survivor, which came out as a consequence of a lot of your life and obviously off the back of your experience on Survivor, where you met your wife and a lot of other things have come off the back of that. Then Outrider arrived, which has literally just been launched a matter of months ago. And there is something about this book which really struck me. Now, I've got two daughters, as you know, and I'm forever told by them that it's important to have a sizzling start at the beginning of any story. And without that, you've got a few problems. And the thing with this book, actually with both of your books, is the sizzling start never came to an end. It was something that I struggled to put down. It was something that I think gave me dreams that I didn't think I'd have after reading a book at nighttime. This was a 5-part, 69-chapter thrilling book that I'd tracked you creating over time. But there were two things that stayed with me that I've got here in front of me now. One of them was to do with a statement that was made right at the end of the book. In fact, I think it was page 349. There's one line that says, "A lifetime of bonding forged in a few days." And there's something really special about anyone who's been through a very intense experience together. You know those friendships never die. They'll be there for a very, very long time to follow. And the second part was the way that you acknowledged your son, Harry, and you described what this book could be in the future, and that you're hoping that he's going to read it back to you when you're a little bit more frail. I think those two parts to this book were something else. But let's talk about the book itself. Tell us about the story, and then we'll dive into what it took to actually bring it to life.
Yeah, let me derobe, mate. It's a bit hot here. it's funny, the genesis of it, man, and this was a partnership thing to go to your theme. It was, I'd done the nonfiction book with my editor, Alex Lloyd at Penn Macmillan. I'd been sitting on this idea of community and bonds that came through, I guess, watching wars unfold in other countries and also watching the pandemic as well and how we behaved during the pandemic. And I think part of that when I was overseas is watching fathers and sons interact and how they grapple with a war in their own backyard. And I had an experience, I remember, during one piece of combat, we pulled up next to a compound to kind of rearm and reload. And there was, as we were parked there next to this person's house, the father came out holding his son in his arms, and he sat down with him for probably half an hour and just watched us with his son while we were going about our business. And he was talking to his son the whole time, kind of whispering to him. And I just remember thinking, you know, what's he saying? You know, what does he worry about? What's it like having a foreign army parked in your backyard? It was a really surreal experience. So I thought about that. I'm like, what if you brought that kind of war home to Australia? How would you behave as a parent? How would you keep your humanity? How would you protect your kids as well as try and defend what's important to you? So that's kind of the premise of the book. And I think that's what made it, gave it a few extra layers. It's not just kind of an action story. It does have that at its heart. It's about a father and a son and the bond they have and try and preserve that in dire circumstances.
And so the process to write this book, I mean, I remember you declaring online that, you know, you're going to start and you're going to help us sort of take a view into what that process is going to be like. I mean, it all is probably over-romanticized now, given it's out now that we're doing, you know, conversations about it and we're spreading the word. What's that process like and who's involved?
Yeah, it's difficult because it's much more horsepower than nonfiction. Nonfiction, you're just taking what's already happened and you're basically carving out a narrative arc and figuring out what to exclude. But with this, everything's getting built from the ground up. Your characters, the world, the antagonists, the inciting incident, the flow and the ebb and flow of the story is all going to be done from scratch, which is quite hard. I really underestimated how hard it would be. So I kind of did an outline, a rough outline, and a bit of a treatment, which was probably 8,000-9,000 words. I gave that to Alex. He read it and goes, and he then used that story. He goes, "This is good." He then used that to pitch it to his acquiring team at Pan Macmillan. They're like, "Okay, if we think there's room in the market for a book like this, let's go ahead." And so from that point on, I started the manuscript in an app called Scrivener, which has a pretty cool word count function in it. You kind of reverse engineer your daily word count you need to deliver your manuscript on time. And that's all I was doing. As I went along, I just like take shots of the manuscript and the word count meter as I was ticking it upwards. And that was good for me. It was actually keeping me accountable at the same time, and people would occasionally cheer you on. I did hear some research though, where they're saying like, if you're too public with your goals, that can be an end in itself, and the feedback you get and encouragement you get from people kind of short circuits the actual goal you're meant to be going for. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Yes. So I didn't promote it as much after that, but I found that just sharing the process with people was really good, and it got people interested in what I was doing. It got people interested in writing, but the story as well. And I just think that's helpful that when you come out to actually sell something, which is what you're doing when you're an author, you've already brought people along a little bit for the journey.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the role in the background, I mean, you've got a young son, you'll be thinking very carefully about, you know, how that's communicated and what he's going to be reading when he's old enough to sort of take all of this in. It must have added quite a dimension to the book, knowing that there was a parallel now from, you know, looking back on that time overseas, seeing the father and son having those conversations while you're on the job, but then also having the son nearby, no doubt coming and tugging on your shirt sleeve a few times saying, let's go and do something else instead of writing. I'm sure it would have been pretty close to home.
Yeah, exactly. I tried to keep the writing window during the period he was kind of at kindy and school. But it's on your mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, the book like that's on your mind the whole time. So, yeah, it's a lonely endeavor for a while you're doing the manuscript. And then once it's out of that and you're into editing, then you're kind of paired up with the team and it's a bit more exciting because they get their hands on it. They see it with fresh eyes and you kind of know if you're onto something.
Well, I think it's fair to say that this story builds pretty incredibly on you as an author compared to what you've done in Survivor. We'll link to all of these in the show notes and we'll be actively promoting it because it is such a triumph to see two very different stories and two very different genres really come to the fore, mate. You've done such a terrific job. And so for anyone who's reading it as well, in case you're listening to this and you're on your phone at the same time, head over to markwales.com.au, I should say, to go and check and see all about the details of what Mark's up to. Mate, let's turn attention just for a moment to the other parts in your life, and we'll turn to this idea of partnership because it's quite a romantic term. It can cover a lot of different things, you know, partnerships at home, partnerships at work, and you've had a number of different context switches, you know, as you've built your own business, be it with keynote speaking and educating companies or Kill Capture, and even back in the military, those ideas of partnership are pretty important to move the needle on anything. Are there any really interesting partnerships that you look back on and say, you know, that's how it's done? That's the way that partnerships should be done more, and maybe you don't see as many of those anymore?
Yeah, I think the best partnerships I've been in is where you share the same kind of vision and values, but your skill sets are very complementary. They don't have to be the same. Yeah. You don't even have to have the same styles, but your skill sets can really support each other. They're the best partnerships I've had. And if I think back, probably my first platoon sergeant, his name was Daryl Egan. I joined the 2nd Battalion. I was young, man. I was like 21 years old. I was fresh as a daisy and super keen, you know, wanted to do everything. But I just didn't have the experience to know how to pull all that together and translate into good training and good teamwork and good leadership. And I think – and the good thing about this sergeant is he had that kind of older head, that clearer mind, and he was smart enough to harness my enthusiasm to make sure the platoon was better. And he made sure that kind of my success would be everyone's success. He made sure I got better at my job. And so he mentored me a lot and he took care of a lot of the background stuff while I was trying to implement, I guess, the vision for how we were going to behave as a platoon. And that ended up being a really good partnership. It worked well. We did, you know, we were operationally sound, we're a safe team, and that was because of his experience and you know, me being as keen as I was and not making the mistakes, I guess, because I had an older hand next to me that could steer me. So that's a good example in my mind of an unlikely pairing that just worked well.
And I guess that would have taken a next step up when you were joining the Special Air Service, you know, a different type of job, a different kind of tempo. I imagine that there's a much tighter knit kind of set of partnerships that are happening at a team level there as well.
Yeah, the expectations are different and the responsibilities are at a much higher level. So you'll come into a troop as a new officer, but the expectation is that you'll be able to lead pretty much any of these missions straight away without, you know, you need mentorship like anyone, but the you're meant to have the skill sets and the training and the temperament to be able to lead these missions straight away. So it's quite a high level of responsibility. Some of them are hostage recovery missions. Some are personal protective detachments, kind of like what you saw with President Trump the other day, like leading missions where you're trying to protect one person from, you know, from disaster. And that's hard because you've got to be on 100% of the time and your opponents only have to get it right once and you're in trouble. Yes. So just these really difficult missions where there's no, you don't have all the answers. You've just got to try and execute and plan as well as you can.
When you think about trying to create a trusting relationship with someone new, you know, whether it be a new soldier that's come into your command or even when you've moved into parts of business now, what are you thinking about to try and develop a level of trust with someone else as quickly as possible? How do you process that?
I think candor is an important part of it. I think frankness, candor, displaying your goals and objectives and character and I guess how you would behave in difficult situations. I think if you can make that clear as early as you can, you don't necessarily have to demonstrate the behavior because it's not always going to be possible to do that. But if you can share examples where you have done it or put yourself in situations where you are having to trust the other person, that can be a good way of just shortcutting people's mindset and going, okay, I think this person is easy to work with. I think they're trustworthy. That's my instincts. Let's now go and find out.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And when you sort of think about forging partnerships today, you've seen a lot of different things. You would be very high in candor, I imagine, with anyone you're looking to do business with. What kind of partnerships are you looking for now, given that your job is sort of multifocal now? We've got Kill Capture working in the background. You've got the speaking and corporate education work that you're doing. You've got film and TV that's also there. Most importantly is the family aspect of what you do, which I know you love to bits. How do you think about sort of managing that time and getting into new partnerships?
Mate, believe it or not, one of my top rules is it's got to be kind of no drama and it's got to be fun or enjoyable. And I just think that, I mean, life's too short to be in a any sort of relationship where you don't have those things. And I've made sure that the people that I work closely with in business or just day to day, or even when we played Survivor, I just made sure, like, all right, it's going to be a hard trip. Let's make sure we enjoy each other's company. We have fun. We do what we think is exciting and enjoyable. And it makes life so much better. Like, you don't want drama.
So much
easier. You don't want combative people who are just. It's okay to be forceful, but just you've got to be able to cooperate and just execute and enjoy yourself while you're doing it. And you don't have to dominate it, and you don't have to be in charge, and you don't have to have, you know, credit for it. You've just got to get your mission, your stated mission done as well as you can and enjoyably as you can. And funnily enough, when you start doing that, you perform at a much better level because you've got an open mind.
You know, it's funny, we've built a framework to help organizations think through exactly that because everyone does have competing priorities and also just competing incentives. We call it IDEAL, and it's about helping somebody work through five really straightforward questions. And it starts with intent. You know, how is it that somebody's how are you going to come together to make this work? And it's really interesting to me how when somebody says, let's go and do something together, and the first thing they do is they rush into a contract or they rush into a thing without actually having spent time building out a shared language and an intention to go, well, actually, when I use this word, this is what I mean. When you use that word, I didn't know that you'd mean something completely different. And it takes, you know, three or four conversations, separate meetings to sort of work that through. And it's often when people say, well, partnerships don't tend to work out very well. You know, people haven't worked out the language to use yet to actually get on the right footing so they can have things done. And we've got more about that coming up later in other episodes, but it's just really interesting to see how people who've seen a lot of their life, just like you, have arrived at a position that says, you know, I've got some priorities. It's about having fun, and it's basically about no bullshit. Let's try and get good work done together and have a good time doing it.
Yeah, you picked a good point there earlier, which is alignment of incentives. I think if you don't get that part right, it's really hard to be rowing in the same direction in any partnership. A good example of this where I kind of took a chance and it worked out well was when I was trying to grow Kill Capture. I was by myself pretty much, and I was kind of looking for a partner, but I wanted someone I could work with that was going to be knowledgeable and fun and kind of willing to do the same stuff I was willing to do. And one guy was helping me just randomly. He loved the brand, and he was just helping me do some of the social media. Never asked for anything, just wanted to help out. And after a while, I was just enjoying working with someone else. I'm like, mate, why don't you come on as a partner? Yeah. And I thought about it. I'm like, how do I do this? Because he had the skills and qualities. He'd done it with another brand. He was a capable guy. He was fun to work with. And I'm like, look, I'm going to take a chance and give him a percentage of the company vested over time. But I'm like, how much? Is it a small portion? Is it a almost equal portion? And the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, well, you know what? I'm just going to take a risk here and give an almost equal portion. And that way we'll be totally aligned with our incentives as we build. And, mate, it ended up being the smartest thing I did, because he came on, he felt like he had just as much ownership as I did. He was just as excited as I was, and he had a totally different skill set and approach. So that really pushed us along well. But that was I took a risk there, but I was listening to my instincts about his behaviors and morals and what he wanted to get out of life, and it turned out well.
How long do you think it took you to sort of understand that and have the confidence to go, actually, the right call here is to go a bit more equal than trying to shave the deal? Because I was speaking to Ryan Hawke about this maybe 2 months ago, and his very clear perspective was, don't be the guy who tries to shave every little penny off a deal so you can get the better deal. Just don't be that guy. You know, how long did it take you to arrive at that position with this other fella?
Well, my thought was, and this is that kind of scarcity versus abundance mindset, I'm like, well, the size of the pie matters a lot less than the size of the pie, right? Like, if we can make a really freaking big pie, then my share is going to be worth a lot more. I think we can do that. Yeah. And then that, you know, 1% you were quibbling over for so long is totally irrelevant. You just made something a lot better. So to me, it's like negotiate, but have the goal in mind. The point is to do something fun, build something fun, and understand the statistics that most companies don't survive. And so those tiny things that you're arguing over might be totally irrelevant. Just get on with building something and making it fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. One of the other mantras we have here is, instead of thinking about duration of a partnership, we think about eras. And we use that term really specifically because whenever you think about anybody who recounts a really fantastic experience, they'll often say it's an end of an era. And they talk about that with a lot of affection. So when we when we talk about partnerships, we think about how long does it take to actually forge something brilliant? And that forging takes years, right? When somebody says we're going to do a one-year partnership, it's sort of, no, that's a one-year arrangement, right? Because you're going to try and just get something done tactically, and that might be the right thing for that time. But when we think about, you know, 2+1, minimum 2 years, plus one to see how it's going to work out, if at the end of that you end up rolling that 3 or 4 times, you end up with a partnership for 6 or 10 years, and it comes to an end, there's a good chance you'll be looking back on it and saying, well, actually, that was the end of an era, and I'm kind of sad it's finished because it was a fantastic time that we spent together. And I think that's the essence of what we're looking for in these kind of partnerships.
Yeah, you're right. They evolve over time, and that's the way it should be, right? It should adapt over the years.
That's it. Mate, you talked a lot, well, you've talked about this previously a lot in the book, particularly in the acknowledgements you acknowledge your wife, Sam, and the role that she plays at the core of, you know, what you do and how it's all played out for you since you both met. That partnership seems super strong, and you've all been through quite a bit together. When you sort of think about where you've come from and the role that Sam plays in your world to give you strength and encouragement the same way I know you give to her, how do you describe that to people? Because, you know, often the strength that comes from people operating out in the world comes from how strong their home is. How would you describe that and encourage people to think about that as a really key relationship and partnership?
Well, I just think I think where you have clashes in partnerships like that, it's over a competing vision of the future. And I think if you can find someone who shares a similar view of what they want to achieve with their future, that's where you'll get the most success. And to Sam's credit, she's very much an entrepreneur. She gave me the confidence to be an entrepreneur as well, which I found hard to do up until that point. I was working so hard in major companies, and I had high overheads because I'm living in New York City. Like, it's hard to be an entrepreneur in those circumstances. But she was smart enough to show me an alternative path. And I guess it was a confidence and a mindset thing that I didn't have at that point, which is crazy when you think about it, because I was equipped to be able to do it. I just didn't have the confidence at that point to be able to pull it off. So that's her strength, and she does imbue that confidence in people, and it's a real gift.
When you think about reinvention, and you're sort of talking in front of a group of people who are trying to think about, you know, what comes next for them. They could be veterans transitioning. They could be people in everyday life just thinking about what comes next for them. You know, I've heard you provide some really wise words in the past about, you know, reinvention is a skill. It's one that we should all get pretty good at, because life sometimes doesn't play out the way you expect it to play out. What's the guidance you give to people on the path of reinvention to make them feel as though it's a pretty normal part of life?
Well, I think one is that the skills you develop doing it are almost an end in itself. It's like, even if you don't, if you try a transition, you don't get exactly to the destination you want to, the fact that you've even done it and you've been through that crucible and that you've learned the things that you have, that on its own is such a big gift that you can then pick up and do a second time and a third time and a fourth time. And it gives you another level of resilience and another level of confidence that if the world, you know, if you lost your job and everything changed and you had to totally start yourself again, you could actually do it. You've got the mindset to be able to go, well, I can build things from the ground up. This is my vision. These are the kind of sub steps to get there. This is an important part of it, is learning how to learn. Like, this is how I learn best. You kind of come up with a way, whether it's audio or hands-on or reading or a combination of the above. If you know how you learn best, you can really apply that to make sure you learn quickly in any given field. And I think an example of that, I guess, is when I was in the military looking to exit and go to business school. I just bought every book I could find on the Ivy League schools in the US, every book I could find, and read it just to get a really in-depth knowledge of it. Then I went to more specific books and courses around entry to the US school system. So you kind of, I start abroad, try to think, is this what I really want to do? And then, as I said, this interest is still there. Then I got more specific on the tasks I had to complete to kind of get to that point. So I think that awareness of how you learn, what's exciting to you, how you can apply yourself for many, many years. Like, if you can learn that, then it doesn't matter how you reinvent yourself or what you choose. You'll always be able to use that as a skill on its own.
I love that. That's fantastic. Mate, let's get into the rapid fire so that we can close this out. And again, thanks for being here today. It's great to see you, and the success you're having is very well deserved. So, five questions. Are you ready to go?
Yeah.
All right, here it is. Complete this sentence. Partnership is?
1 + 1 = 5.
Nice. Number two, what content are you loving at the moment?
Mate, I'm listening to the Bronwyn podcast. I've never been a true crime person, but it's really intriguing.
Nice. What's the worst piece of advice you've received and why?
Play it safe. I think playing it safe is one of the most dangerous things you can do. You've got to you've got to stretch yourself, you've got to push yourself, and you've got to fail sometimes to find that envelope of growth.
Couldn't agree more. All right, when you see potential for a new partnership, what's the first thing you do to turn that potential into action?
Socialize. I'll socialize with someone when there's no overt agenda, there's no competing kind of mindsets or transactional things happening. You can just get a gauge of someone. So I'm trying to understand their character and their beliefs and their values.
And final one, what's one thing you're deeply grateful for at the moment?
Mate, I'm grateful to be physically intact and mentally intact enough to be a father. I think I really was lucky to exit the career that I did and be able to go on and build a new life. Very grateful for that.
If people want to try and find out more about you, the books, the leadership work that you do, where's the best place to send them?
Mate, markwales.com.au is good, and I'm also on all the social platforms, so Instagram and LinkedIn. So, reach out anytime and say good day. I try and respond to everyone, so, yeah, say hello.
Fantastic. Mate, thank you for giving me the time today. It's fantastic to see you, and all the best.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks for listening to the end of this episode of Partnership Plus. If you like what you heard, you can share this episode via text message. And if you'd like to build your business partnership muscle, my free weekly newsletter called Wednesday Partnership will help you do just that. You'll find a link in the show notes. Finally, I'm big on encouragement and love to see people be in motion towards their ambitions. So if you know someone who might be struggling, reach out to them with a quick message of encouragement. It could change their life. Thanks again, and I'll see you in the next episode.